What could your nonprofit or local unit of government do with up to $2,500 in Portage Health Foundation grant funds to improve the health of our community? In 2022, this RFP led to 8 projects being funded, including elder programming at the Keweenaw Bay Indian Community, a therapy dog at the Adams Township Schools, park upgrades in Lorium and Hancock, and an outside classroom renovation at Calumet Art Center. The possibilities are endless. We can't wait to see what your group will do with Portage Health Foundation's $2,500 small grant opportunity. Learn more at phfgive.org.
Once again, good Sunday morning and welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. You can find out more about them, of course, at phfgive.org. The Portage Health Foundation is one of many groups in the region behind a growing emphasis on local food distribution and farm markets where local growers can sell their products. And I welcome into the studio for the first segment this morning, Jake Tenharmsel from the From the Ground Farmers Markets. Jake, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Todd.
Explain for those who might not be familiar, because it's a relatively new organization yet, what is From the Ground Farmers Markets?
Sure. From the Ground Farmers Market Collective is a grassroots organization led by farmers and communities developed to facilitate food access programs, market coordination, farm-to-school and vendor capacity, and building regional producers.
A lot of people, I'm sure, are surprised to find out that we do have a pretty active farming and growing community in this area. Obviously, 120 years ago, we were growing most of our own food here. That kind of disappeared over the years, and now it's coming back.
Yeah, that's true. It seems like, especially in the last 10 years or so, we've kind of had a bit of a revival. Some younger groups of people have been putting together little farms, CSA-type farms, market farms. So, yeah, we are trying to kind of take back our food production system here in the area locally, yeah.
Now, this is not the kind of farming I think that a lot of people think of. They travel downstate into the Midwest. They see these huge farms with, you know, 40-acre fields of grain and that kind of thing. We're not doing that.
That's correct. Most of the organizations, especially the farmers that we're growing with now, are on a small scale, maybe a couple of acres. When it comes to livestock, they're, you know, maybe a couple of dozen animals at max. So a very small scale, almost one might consider it to be kind of a homestead kind of approach or a subsistence type farming.
Are most of these people making their full living off of this, or is this a side hustle?
I would say for many of us, I'm a grower as well as part of the From the Ground Farmers Market Collective board. I would say many of us, this is what we would eventually hope to be our main source of income. But unfortunately, we have to have side gigs to help subsidize our income and pay the bills.
Well, and you're hampered by a number of things. First of all, the types of things you can grow, somewhat limited, I would suspect, because we still have a very short growing season, although it has stretched out a little bit with a little global warming.
Yep.
How limiting is that as to what you might want to grow as opposed to what you can grow?
I think the biggest limitation is the length of our season. Give or take, we have about 110 frost-free days. So if we have a crop that requires 120 days to come to fruition, then that is not something that we could potentially grow. And then, of course, warmer type crops, things like watermelon, okra, stuff that is very, you know, accessible in southern, more warm regions, just really doesn't do that well without, you know, a lot of extra handling. So I'm sure that we would all love to grow anything that we possibly can. I mean, even mangoes would be great.
Tangerines.
But, yeah, tangerines, sure.
Citrus. Keweenaw tangerines.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But yeah, we are very limited by our very short season. And, you know, our season is very dynamic up here too. We sometimes get a very cold summer where, you know, tomatoes just barely ripen by fall. And sometimes we get a nice warm summer and we have an abundance of peppers. So there's a lot of dynamics involved with that, but it is limiting in the length of our season. And a lot of us are using techniques where we're doing year-round hoop houses or greenhouses that are either slightly heated or fully heated. There's some aquaponics growers. We use high tunnels and different row covers to try to extend that season a couple of weeks on either side. So that helps, but
Can use hoop houses to start your plants, I would assume, and in some cases transplant them out when they're 3-4 weeks old, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So, what kind of things do you grow?
North Harvest CSA Farm is the name of our farm, and we grow tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, lots of really nice greens, of course, kale and Swiss chard, peas, beans, potatoes, squash, kind of all the things that we're able to grow up here. We try to be pretty diverse about it. There's some things that we are not very good at growing, so we don't, or we kind of gave up, like cauliflower is an example of that. For some reason, we just have not nailed down that technique.
Doesn't hurt my feelings, I'll confess.
So that's one thing that that we maybe can try to get a little bit better at. And I know that other growers in the area, Borsma's especially, are wonderful at the brassicas and cauliflower, especially broccoli, those types of things. They've got it pretty much nailed down. So we grow all that. And then this year we're especially trying to kind of double down on flower production. So we're hoping to produce a lot more flowers this year.
Okay, that's interesting. You're from Southwest Michigan. You mentioned in our previous conversation that you're from the Holland area. I, of course, grew up in the Kalamazoo area, where bedding plants were a huge industry down there. And that came from the Dutch heritage that you and I kind of share in that regard as well. The other thing that I'm sure you were made aware of very early on, that's a fruit-producing region down there.
Yeah,
one of the things I really miss up here is all of that wonderful fresh fruit you used to get at the Kalamazoo Farmers Market.
Absolutely.
But it's risky because, and I've seen it year after year after year, all of a sudden there's either the late frost or the early warm spell that starts the trees going too early, and I have seen entire crops get wiped out. This is a risky thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we deal with that risk up here as well. That is, I think, part of the reason why fruit growing in this area has kind of gone by the wayside, because that window is very narrow for us. But I do remember when we first kind of came back to the area about 10 years ago, there was a you know, it was like an 80-degree March, and then there was a cold snap that totally decimated the fruit crop throughout the whole Midwest.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that is something that you really got to kind of have to hedge your bets on. And that is very much the same with any of our crops that we plant early. You know, we always try to get sneak in some spinach or some early greens or something like that. And if they come up and we get a hard frost, then that's something that we're just going to kind of have to swallow when it comes to the failure on that. So We try to be pretty careful about that, but we're always trying to kind of push that season extension a little bit in the beginning and a little bit at the end, and we kind of hedge our bets and hope for the best, and sometimes it works great and sometimes not so much.
You can't be a farmer if you're not an optimist.
I would have to agree with that.
I grew up in farm country, and every year they'd be out there planting stuff, and you know, you just cross your fingers and hope that now some of the bigger farmers I know can hedge their bets with crop insurance, and they can buy futures and things of that nature.
Yep.
Are there ways that small farmers can kind of prepare for disaster?
You know, yes and no. As far as crop insurance, that's a little bit trickier because a lot of times that's dealt in acres as opposed to beds.
Yeah.
But I would say the best way that we can ensure that we're going to have success is by diversity. So by growing lots of different things and planting at lots of different times, and in general, kind of planting way more than you think you need. And it's better to have too much and than too little, because we generally have the market for it. Our community has come through really well with you know, purchasing our goods. So it's kind of hard to have too much in a lot of ways. So diversity is really key.
Well, if you have too much, there are food banks.
Yep,
there which are. I mean, it obviously costs you something to produce those things. You hate to give it away.
Right, but we'd rather see it used than sure. to see it go to waste. So absolutely, there's food banks. There's ways to donate in various methods. And then, of course, the different programs that we offer allows people to get food for either free or subsidized as well. So that helps.
Yeah, and that's something that's really helped, I think, kind of turn this all around. I'm talking with Jake Ten Harmsel, who is with the From the Ground Farmers Market Cooperative here and is a grower himself. Farm markets used to be cash only.
Yep, that's true.
And now... when, frankly, one of the reasons that your group was put together
yes.
was to be able to start to find ways that the individual farmers markets, the little ones that various cities had started in the area, could combine their efforts and find ways to help make this more accessible to other people, either through discounts that can be given, bridge card acceptance, things of that nature.
Yeah, all of those things. Yeah, that's exactly right. The main reason that we started this organization is to help support all of our different food access programs. And so as we started growing in the area, one of the easier and more accessible food access programs was Senior Project Fresh. So that was sort of what we started out with. And then as we kind of got going with that and realized the value of that and how much people appreciated it, then we started looking into different food access programs to help provide food to people that are, a little less privileged or just don't quite have the money for, you know, the fancy organic stuff. And so that was one thing that, we as a farm personally, as well as this organization, wanted to try to offer food to people that couldn't necessarily afford it, because oftentimes people think organic food is too expensive or inaccessible or kind
of
bougie.
Go to a big city and go into the Whole Foods store and look at the prices.
Exactly.
And you see that, golly sakes, if I'm raising three kids on minimum wage, I'm not going to be able to afford that fresh stuff.
Exactly. So we wanted to kind of avoid that, or at least make room for the underserved population. We offer seven or eight different programs for food access, including SNAP, Double Up SNAP, Senior Project Fresh, WIC, Portage Library Bucks, Husky Bucks, Prescription for Health UpCap, and Prescription for Health Spirus. So all of these programs do take a little bit of management as far as the back end, you know, the bookwork and kind of just the paperwork and so forth. So we definitely needed help, and Portage Health Foundation definitely helped us kind of get some of this stuff going and help provide some funding for that so that we could hire a market manager that could manage kind of the books end of that, because us as farmers were kind of busy. So we weren't really able to keep up. You know, it was honestly hard enough to keep up with Senior Project Fresh. And so we needed help. And so luckily we were able to find that person and find the funding to support that.
Very few of the good farmers that I know, and I grew up with a bunch of farm kids, and a lot of them are still in the farm business downstate, and none of them liked the paperwork part of it. They're farmers because they want to be farmers. Mm-hmm. They love going out. They love the equipment. They love the animals. They love the dirt. They love all of that stuff that comes along with it, the great satisfaction that comes from seeing those crops grow. They get absolutely nothing out of bookkeeping.
That's absolutely true. And, another thing that this organization is hoping to provide is kind of assistance in some of the marketing and other issues that farmers, kind of come up against. Again, we just don't have the time to figure that stuff out. We don't have the degrees in those fields. We need to market our products, and we want to make sure that our books are correct, and we want to make sure that we get our food out to the underserved community, but we don't have the time. So it's really difficult.
Well, and major producers downstate have organizations.
Right.
The blueberry growers have an organization.
Sure.
The cherry growers have an organization. All of them have various organizations that have paid staff and help, and they pay, in some cases, premiums to the state government,
absolutely,
which funds those organizations. And we don't have that. It's kind of a catch-22. We need that, but until you can afford it, you can't have it.
Yeah.
So From the Ground Farmers Market Cooperative was put together to kind of try to fill that gap.
Yep. Absolutely. That is the goal. From the Ground Farmers Market Collective was definitely put together to kind of be a support system for our different producers in the area. And not just farmers, but also artisan crafts and bakers and cottage food people that are making, you know, things like jam and jellies and different cookies and dried goods and all kinds of that fun stuff too. So we're of course, focused on food, but we want to offer support to anyone that's going to be involved in our farmers markets in general.
Yeah, let's go there a little bit, because we're at the point now where registration has opened for the farmers markets coming up this summer. Which farmers markets are involved?
Okay, so we are registration for vendors is open now for the Calumet Farmers Market, the Hancock Torrey, and the Houghton Downtown Market. So the Houghton Market is held on the pier, really pretty. We moved that at the end of the season last year, and that turns out is really
That's
sweet.
That's going to be a great location for this.
Yep. And then the Hancock Torrey is in its traditional place there on the Quincy Green in Hancock, also a beautiful spot. And then the Calumet Market, we are actually moving over to Agassiz Park because there'll be some development in our former spot right there on Fifth Street.
Okay, so not next to the theater this summer. You'll be out in Agassiz Park.
Correct. Yep. Yep. And I guess just to kind of clarify, Calumet is on Saturday, 10 to 2. And we're working on a new thing with a flex hour where we're going to do 2 to 3 for kind of the vendors that have an abundance of product to stick around for an extra hour. And then the Houghton Market is on Tuesday from 3 to 6 with, again, another flex hour there from 6 to 7. And then the Hancock Torrey is 3 to 6 on Thursdays.
Thursdays.
Yep.
So now there are other farmers markets that have also popped up
there
in recent years. Lake Linden has started one. Chassel started one last summer. There are a couple down in Baraga County that are held down there. Are those not part of the organization at this point? They're still working on their own?
Correct. At this point, they are not part of the organization. We have definitely reached out to all of them in one form or another, and we definitely are willing to offer our support as far as any sort of consultation in that way. But, you know, in a lot of ways, farmers markets want to maintain their identity, and so there is, you know, kind of that aspect of it where they're doing their own thing, and so we are interested and willing to grow in the future and potentially help out other markets in other regions. We're definitely looking at Lance and Lake Linden, and really anybody that reaches out to us, we're willing to listen to and at the very least consult with. So, but yeah, we totally encourage any farmers market to start anywhere. We're by no means a competitive by nature. We want to make sure that our food system is supported, and the more food and the more activities and the more exposure that our local producers have, then the better I think it is for all of us.
So what kind of vendors are you looking for to fill these markets?
So again, our food access programs are of course food oriented. So those would involve anything that is locally grown or locally produced in the way of baked goods, you know, patisserie or kind of you know, cookies and cottage food type ingredients. So those are kind of our main focus. But of course, we also want to have our kind of like high quality artisans that are bringing their beautiful woodwork or metallurgy or things like that. So we do want to have a nice mix of both artisans as well as food producers. And of course, farmers themselves. So we kind of have a primary goal of all of our vendors would hopefully produce their products within 100 miles of the Houghton Hancock area. All so right. Very locally oriented.
How do people sign up as vendors?
So you would go to our website, fromthegroundfmc.org, and you would click on the application, and there's a handful of questions that you would answer there, including what kind of things you would like to sell, and then also there is kind of an important aspect of it where we would like any of our vendors that are accepting food programs to attend a vendor training, which will happen in May. And there'll be more information. There is more information on the website that pertains to that.
Okay.
So that's going to be kind of an important part of this. So the reason that we want to have everybody signed up nice and early is so that we can kind of make sure that we know who we have, what they're selling, make sure that it's all approved goods, and then we can make sure that they're trained in so that they're not accepting a program that they're not qualified for. Because we don't want people accepting tickets for something that the ticket is not, or tokens or coins or whatever, that they're not qualified for, and then they can't get reimbursed. So we want to make sure people are kind of protecting their product that in that way.
Yeah. Food safety, obviously an issue, particularly when you're talking about people who are making homemade baked goods, things of that nature, and indeed, you know, growers as well. You have rules that you have to follow as a grower, and people who bake in kitchens have rules they have to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. The cottage food laws are pretty cut and dry as far as what you can and cannot produce for market. And then in general, when it comes to growing produce and then selling that, it's for the most part, it's kind of a farmer-to-consumer approach. And that's the same with cottage food laws. It's the producer-to-consumer approach. So there's, yeah, there's a lot of issues that one might come across when it comes to food safety. But we do work with the health department as farmers and as an organization to make sure that people are abiding by those. We make sure that the labeling is correct. I mean, that is definitely part of that vendor training, is making sure that our labeling is correct, our advertising is correct, and that we're not kind of making a mess, so to speak.
Yeah, because there are certain ingredients that you need to alert people to.
Absolutely.
If there are you know, peanuts, or we recently had a recall of hot dog buns because some sesame seeds were included in them. And there are people who have reactions to that, and those types of things do have to be disclosed.
Absolutely.
It wasn't that long ago that they revised those cottage food laws to make it a lot easier for people to do this kind of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It's a pretty straightforward approach. There's no particular licensing or anything. I guess the most important part of the cottage food law is proper labeling.
Yeah. So not only do you deal with the various farm markets, the direct to consumers, but there are also efforts to try to get locally grown food into restaurants and institutions locally, into our schools.
Absolutely.
How do you work with that?
That is sort of supported by the Farmers Market Collective in a lot of ways. You know, there's everybody that's working with this kind of has their different influences and knowledges about different, you know, health departments and schools and so forth. So, yeah, at this point, a lot of our growers are offering food to local schools. The restaurants, that's sort of on an individual basis, based on the grower and the relationship between the restaurant. So that kind of isn't as much a part of this organization itself, but we definitely sell to restaurants, schools. We need to probably work on getting into the hospitals a little bit more if they're interested. And I know they have expressed interest with that. It's just sometimes the logistics of that and also the quantity sometimes for us smaller growers is hard to keep up in that way. And then, you know, the price point too, when we're talking about wholesale versus retail. And
is consistency an issue? Because if you're working a small farm, you have a lot of stuff that gets ready this week and maybe none next week.
Yep.
So for somebody who needs it on a regular basis, is that a challenge?
That absolutely can be a challenge, you know, and that's really more on our end. That's something as a grower we need to just kind of consider as a factor, and then try to plan for that. But yeah, for example, if a restaurant wants romaine every week for 18 weeks during the summer, you know, in those warmer summer months, sometimes it's hard to produce romaine. So, you know, as a grower, we might make adjustments with shade cloth and timing and transplant timing to hopefully try to contribute to that consistency. But that is probably one of the more difficult issues when it comes to especially providing to restaurants where they're kind of reliant on that consistent menu item.
Yeah. Are there particular strains of these vegetables and plants and such that work better here than maybe work downstate that are a little more adapted to our climate?
There are definitely colder, hardy lettuces and definitely colder, hardy brassicas, which is in kind of the cabbage broccoli family. And then also, since we have such long days, you know, especially onions, there are certain types of onions that we grow up here that work much better here that are long day variety crops as opposed to a shorter day. Because we get, in the summertime, our days are 16 and a half hours long, give or take.
Yeah, we get a lot more sun here than they get in Alabama.
Right, exactly.
Jake Ten Harmsel, if somebody wants to learn more about the cooperative, maybe they're interested in joining, maybe you're interested in becoming a vendor, how do they do that?
So the absolute best way to learn more about us is to go to fromthegroundfmc.org. So that's our website, and that gives all the information that you might be looking for. And then, of course, if there's information that you can't find on there, then you can email us or contact us. There's information there.
Absolutely. We've got to wrap this up. Jake Ten Harmsel, thank you for sharing, and hope we have a great summer, both for you as growers and for consumers as buyers at our farm markets.
Awesome. Thank you, Todd. It's been an honor and a pleasure.